Blog Talk Radio.
Conversation that I don't think that we have often enough, and it's one of those things, like, it's one of those things that people don't think exist, but it's not a dinosaur, it's not a unicorn, it's not a mermaid. There are plenty of black people that go to boarding schools, but do they go to the boarding schools that we would typically stereotype or vision as being the type of boarding schools that we are familiar with? Maybe sometimes yes, maybe sometimes no. But as we were talking to my baby brother yesterday, we found out a lot of things. I know that I found out things that I thought I already knew. But his insight into the way that he developed into the educational system and how he developed his education was detailed in many ways that I wasn't privy to. So we wanted to come on today and finish that conversation, get back into it. So what's going to wind up happening? I'm going to tell you what's going to wind up happening. I'm going to wind up having to just call him on the show. So what we're going to do is I'm going to give him a few minutes to breathe. I'm going to let him live. Yes, I am. I'm going to let him live and let him blend into it, because he might think that I don't want him to come through till like 11:30 and whatever. But I want to get him in early because I really want to finish up that conversation, because I wanted to get into the whole thing about Umar Johnson, because I know Umar Johnson personally, and he went to school with Umar Johnson. Umar Johnson is older than him, but But he graduated with my other baby brother, who is 4 years younger than me, 4 years older than, well, about 6 years older than him. So when we talk about our experiences and the differences between when you are witnessing somebody doing something and when you are actually on the inside getting all of that information that cannot be disputed because you are getting it firsthand, and nobody can't tell you nothing about what you seen, what you heard, what you felt, how you felt, how it was going down, up. And we know now that we going to hear that thing coming out with the sound. My man Donald Mack, my other brother from another mother, Donald Mack, is all up on the Instagram side. Good to see you, my brother. Without a doubt, if you out there working this morning, please be careful over there. Please be careful over there on the west side of Pennsylvania. We know how you do. Yeah, I know you be out there hustling all crazy. Stacey Yvette White says, my baby cousin is going to Seattle after he graduated from college. Okay, that's what's up. Oh, you say you are so sad right now. Try to cheer up. It's going to be all right. We're going to work it out. And what's going on, Carol Chamber? Let me favorita. Carol Chamber. Let me favorita to see me from you. You know exactly how we do. All right, let's get it popping. Urban Therapy with Sun 752. When this your daily tip. And it's the Urban Therapy with Sun Show. We do this each and every Sunday morning from 11 o'clock till around 12:30-ish. And the reason that we say 12:30-ish is because sometimes it gets so heated that we just have to do a little OT on a hump day. And it is. Okay, we're going to. Urban Therapy with Sun 752. And this is the Urban Therapy with Sun Show. We do this every single Sunday morning from 11 o'clock till around 12:30-ish. And the reason that we say 12:30-ish is because sometimes it gets so heated that we just have to do a little OT on a Sunday. And it is Sunday. It's the March 7th, 2021. And I am your host, Sun 752, a.k.a. Omar with the rrr. And if you can't say Omar with the rrr, well, then you just say Omar with the R. This is the show where adults come out and play with other adults. We laugh, we cry, we argue, fuss, and fight, go back and forth with each other, bust it up all crazy. We push each other on the swings, up the sliding board, on the merry-go-round. We play in a sandbox, on the monkey bars. We just have a good time with each other. We try to take an introspective look into this thing, introspective look into our own lives to see how we project ourselves out into the universe and fit into this thing called life. And this morning, we're talking about black people and boarding homes, part two, and camping and group homes, part two. We're going to get all into it. Two. So I'm glad to have you here. Share the show and make sure that you push that like button, yo, and can't forget, subscribe to the channel, and let's heat this thing up just like flames of flannel. Everything is going to be all right. Tonight is the morning. Yo, get up, yawn. I'm glad you came on. You could be anywhere in the world, but you're right here. Yeah. Surely, the world's most precious and greatest pearl in the world. What's going on, Miles? It's good to see me some you. All right, group homes. We got to talk about group homes. Yesterday, we didn't really get a chance to go in depth about group homes, but we do need to have a conversation about that. So listen, let me do this. I'm going to call my baby brother. You know what I mean? Because he was all gung-ho about it yesterday. I want to make sure that, everything is all right. Let's see how I go. You call from the switchboard, though. The thing about it is that it comes up a number. You might not have. How can a phone ring that many times? That lets me know that there's probably some kind of interference with the signal. Phone ring that many times. And then it just stops. Okay. All right. So we're going to have to do it like this. We're going to have to do it like this.
Hello.
Yo.
Yo, what
up, son? Yo, you supposed to be calling the show right now.
All right.
Well, you know. Yeah, no, but look, I don't care. You ain't getting out of this. You ain't getting out of this. You know what I'm saying? Like, we going to make this thing happen. It's going to be all right. I mean, as long as you come through with the info, everything is going to be straight. All right, Aqua Activated. What's going on, Aqua Activated? Good to see me, some you. So, yeah, so when my baby brother calls in, we're going to get this thing started. So what we want to start the conversation off is where we left off from yesterday. And yesterday we were starting to talk about we were going to talk about you know, Umar Johnson and our relationship with Umar. Like, I know Umar personally, my baby brother knows Umar personally, and so because Umar went to a military boarding school and graduated from there and everything, I think that it had a strong effect on his outlook on the way that he viewed education. You know that he is an advocate. He's a child advocate, and he was a child advocate in the Philadelphia school district for psychology. Umar Johnson is a psychologist. There was a lot of static, a lot of confusion, a lot of questions about whether he was actually an actual doctor, PhD holding psychologist. He proved that he did get his papers and all of that. And he's certified. So it is actually Dr. Umar Johnson. But people who know Umar Johnson personally, people who know him personally have a little bit more of a we have a clearer window to where he's coming from and why he wants to build a school for Black children exclusively, which is a boarding school. Now, I've heard Umar talk before. I've heard Umar say that he thinks that Black children have a better chance at getting a better education and a better chance at succeeding in life if they are removed from their parents. And I don't know if he meant all parents, but I do remember hearing him say this almost verbatim, and he did not distinguish he didn't distinguish his plan from the parents who may have been looked at as decent parents, attentive parents, and just regular parents. He just said, you know, a lot of these kids, when they have to go home to their parents every day, they get into a whole bunch of mess because their parents really don't know how to raise them and blah, 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 blah. And I thought it was interesting that he looked at it from that perspective, because just keeping it a buck, like my baby brother was talking about yesterday, the house parents that were responsible for the children at the military boarding school that Umar went to were all white. So is he saying that people are sometimes able to raise Black children better than some Black parents are? There may be some truth to that. But is that what he's saying? Because if he wants an all-Black school, which is going to be predicated on teaching, instructing and building a culture of African culture, because Dr. Umar Johnson is a Pan-Africanist. So his whole perspective is all about Africa. It's all African, 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 African. He's taken many trips to Africa, and he has nothing but good things to say about what he considers to be our place of origin, and where he believes we need to hold our centrist thoughts from. So that's how that goes. All right, so I see my baby brother has called in. So let me see if he's ready. Are you ready? Are you ready? Yes, I'm ready. Are you ready? Yes, I'm ready to have this talk. To have this talk. Let's go. Baby brother, are you there? Are you coherent?
I'm here.
All right.
I'm
here. Good?
I'm not done.
You good? Yeah. Cause I feel like I'm pulling you out. I'm pulling you out of the sack. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? But I don't care though.
It's
you know what I mean?
Good.
You know me. I don't care. I'm pulling you out of bed. I'm like, look, man. You know, we got to do this thing. And you going? You said you was going to ride. You know, so you going to ride?
Word. Good. It's all good.
What's up? All right. So,
how y'all doing?
Huh?
Nah, I said, what's up? How y'all doing?
Oh yeah. So you know this is my baby brother from yesterday, and you know for all of the people who may not have been listening yesterday, and he gave us a very very deep personal insight into what it was like for him growing up, you know, going from going into a military boarding school from first grade all the way up into I believe the 10th grade is when you left?
Yes.
Okay. So all the way up to the 10th grade. So we're talking about 10 years strong, you know, from being a child, you know, 5, 6 years old and spending that long into, you know, going towards adulthood. I'm leaving when he was about 15, 16 years old. You know, that's pretty much all of your developmental years. Being under the tutelage of people that hopefully had his best interest at heart. So we wanted baby brother, I wanted to talk to you today about where we left off yesterday. We started to talk about Umar a little bit, and can you explain to people, or you know, chronicle to our viewers a little bit about what you know about Umar Johnson and what your interaction with him may have been, you know, whether it was direct or whether it was indirect, whether it was just somebody that you knew about on when you were in school, somebody who was on campus or whatever. What can you tell us about Umar Johnson and your relationship with him?
It's a very familiar relationship, you know what I mean? I've known him pretty much my whole life, you know, since I was about 6 years old. You know, personal enough, he was considerably older than me. About somewhere between like 8 to 10 years older than me.
That
but
much?
At least
Umar.
7 to 10 years.
Well, Umar is 4 years younger than me. So you are 11 years younger than me. So that would put him, so yeah, about 7 years, something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
okay, I got you.
Yeah. So, we I might have laughed and joked with him a couple times or something as a youngin', but you know, no real deep conversations until I was actually an adult. I hooked back up with him outside of Scotland for a considerable time, like pretty much like a whole summer, and I was actually his first personal, not personal. But I was probably Yeah, I was probably the first volunteer for his current movement, actually, because I was there when he actually first quit working for the school district, and he was actually doing some work with my dad, and we put together flyers and handed them out for the meeting he was holding down North Philly when he first left the UNIAA. And yeah, for people that don't know, he was in the UNIAA first. So when he first left the UNIAA, I had helped pass out flyers and I was young, but to what I could, I helped organize the first meeting to the current movement. And after that, he moved on, but I spent I spent a great deal of the summer around him. And, added to the relationship we had. But, it wasn't too personal, like I said, because of the age difference. But, I got a real gist of who he was and how he was. Like I said, from a child all the way to adulthood. What I mean? He always seemed like a pretty cool guy. I always was confident that his intentions and heart was in the right place at all times. And, the one thing I can remember about Umar is that, his parents had him very well structured in Islam at a young age. And I saw that in him, and he exemplified it and represented it pretty well, and he made it something to be asked about. I will say that. Like, he carried himself in a way that before I understood what being Muslim was and understanding that I was Muslim, he made me interested in it just as much as other characters in books and TVs,
Yeah.
He had a way about him from the rip, just to keep that real. And he was always, he was raised to be pro-black like he is, That's for sure. I'm going to pause, just so I don't ramble like I did yesterday. But, if that helps, any of the background, just let me know.
No. And don't worry, because you can go as long as you want to, as long as you bring in the information. It's really about you. We're getting the information from you, because you were there, you saw it, you heard it, you lived it, you earned the right to tell your story. So in any way that you want to relate it, don't feel no kind of way about that. You got this. But you were there in the grassroots, entry level of stages of when he was putting his movement together. Now, with you telling us about his experience with Islam and pretty much telling us how charismatic he was, how do you think that his experience going to Scotland School for Veterans Children, how do you think that affected him and his motivation to get out there and try to be an activist and get involved with consciousness? Is that something that could happen up there, or was that something that was that the rebel in him manifesting itself after he was able to leave there? You there? Hello? Yo, I don't know if you have us on mute. I don't know if you have us on hold.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I had y'all on mute. Excuse me. I was talking
okay.
like crazy.
Okay.
But my bad. But yeah, from the very first moment I met him, man, he was, he had a kufi on, and he was up in your face and talking about Islam and all types of other issues that he felt like black people had. Like I said, if I was six, dude was 13 going hard. Like, I will say that. Like, going hard, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, real, at that age, like, for a 13-year-old, it was exemplary, you know what I mean? So,
Wait, was he a...
Yeah.
Was he a Sunni Muslim, or was he like more of a Nation of Islam Muslim?
Never really got it. I never really got it. Like, it was only a handful of us up there, and it was like half of us came from FOI, and half of us was Sunni. But it's like it didn't really matter. Like everybody just went Sunni. Up there.
Okay.
So I'm not really sure, but we all just ended up, you know, I'm going Sunni. I'm not
okay.
really sure about Umar, but in the later days. But I will say this, man. I will say this. I can't help but think that it was because of him. Well, not because of him, but, you know, like, probably laid some of the groundwork for the rest of us to be rocking Kufis and, like, later in my generation in Scotland, like my dad actually pushed that where we had Islamic services up there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah, and I got to say that, you know, dude was, he was mad influential in that. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like,
huh?
Yeah, like he made the question about Islam be asked at that very young age. You know what I mean? Not just from rocking the kufi, because of his demeanor and how he carried himself and what he was about at the time.
Okay. So he was able to make his energy was able to get some things done, at least bring some attention to some things that he felt like were important. He was able to push the envelope with that.
I mean, I wouldn't be able to understand it that detail. But
mm-hmm.
But like off as a child, off the little bit of interaction I did have with him, I definitely picked up what I said I did off of him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I can only imagine that he was always pushing the line in some manner. But like, you know, I can't remember him like advocating for the body as a whole, or like making anything happen, or like getting us riled up or anything like that. Like, nah, he wasn't savvy like that. You know, he would just have, you know what I mean? Like I said, he was taught very well, and he would share what he was taught. You know what I'm saying? And he was very pro black and he showed it and what he wore and what he said. And yeah, I definitely picked that up off very little personal interaction with him as a child.
Okay. Yeah. So I was trying. I was trying to get a feel about of what may have been his challenges and being able to forge ahead with his activism and try to get a feel on why he feels like it's so important for him to build a school based on the model of the school that he came from. You know, because I'm thinking like this. If he felt like his school that he went to gave him placed a lot of restrictions on him and kept him from being able to learn things that he wanted to learn or be able to express himself the way he wanted to express himself, which, you know, he has no problem doing these days, or at least appears not to have any problem doing these days. If you have a lot of problems being able to do what you want to do or say what you want to say, express yourself in the way that you think is important, you're probably not going to try to model something after that. As pro-black as Umar is, and I don't think that whatever you think about Umar Johnson, I do not think that you can deny that he is pro-black. If he ain't nothing, he's that all the way, 100%. But by him being raised and guided, I don't know how long Umar went to Scotland. Did he go from first to 12th? Do you know that?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not absolutely sure, but I think he was there. He started young.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah,
so,
regardless,
around those ages, if you knew him when he was, you know, 11, 12, 13 years old, that's still in the developmental stages of your life. So those years, those formative years are going to have a really big effect on you in the way that you see, the way that you view authority, the way that you view pain, pleasure, nice, mean, you know, things like that. Things like that are important to young people as far as being able to get comfortable in certain situations and express themselves freely and openly the way that most young people would like to be able to do. Some have restrictions placed on them. So I'm thinking that if Umar was able to at least do a lot of the things that he wanted to do and express himself in a lot of ways that he wanted to express himself, he probably had no problem trying to model a school that was similar to the one he went to. However, as pro-black as he is, but being exposed to so many white people in authority, I think it's interesting that he would want to create a model that way. Now, that's not to say that he wants to have white house mothers or house. Were there male
house parents?
Yeah, house parents, whatever. I'm like a house father. I don't know.
You know what I'm saying?
I was about to mess around and call him a house husband. Yeah, if it was a house husband. Nah, but so I'm wondering, you know, what happened with him in Scotland? And that's, I'm not saying that to say that something happened to him. That's why I said what happened with him. What do you think he experienced there that made him say, you know what, I would do it just like they did it? Now, do you think that there were influences on him that were that strong in a positive way that made him feel like, you know, I could do it the same way? Well, I can incorporate a lot of the same principles, but focus it to a little bit more on the positive for young people that are coming up, and give our young people a chance to advance or succeed. Like, what do you think about that? How do you think that boarding school, that military boarding school, affected Umar, if you had to guess?
I would say it positively impacted him for sure. And I believe that after he left, he realized how the structure of it probably forced us all to become men young. And, you know, in today's society, that's a good thing. You know what I mean? Because it's not like you're forced to handle responsibilities you're not ready for. It's just that, like, you were forced to deal with yourself, emotions, and actions on your own. Like, you know, you had to work it out. You didn't have the support and coddling of an artificial world that you could build because you had parents and somewhere to go in a shell. It was kind of like, you know, everything was up front, out in the open. Like, you know, your hygiene was clear. There was nowhere to run if you had bad hygiene. Like, no. Like, you had to take care of it. Like, if your parents wasn't on it, there was somebody in just the way things were that, like, you weren't going to be able to continue having bad hygiene and good social life also. But,
yeah,
you know, in public school, we all know how that go.
We do.
A kid to get teased all day, be dirty and stinking, but they get to go home and not be that, and they never fix the problem. You know what I mean? So, you know, up there, it was like, nah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, kids went back home looking at their parents funny. Like, yo, what's going on? Who's this? So, you know, Yeah, I mean, we was forced to have good hygiene. We were forced to do our schoolwork, you know, well. You know, it wasn't just like, oh, your homework's done and it's all good. Like, you weren't allowed to, like, failure wasn't an option there. It absolutely was not an option. It was you, you know, to fail, you had to trade in your entire social and recreational life. It was a clear trade-off. And the way they had it structured, it was great. It was, you know, it kept you balanced and it gave you the real world. It instilled in you the real world concept of, you know, working for yours. Like, you know, having to, you know what I mean, actually do something to get results. You know, like nobody up there was able to escape this. Like, you weren't allowed to fail. So, That was a major thing. So the education was actually automatic. It was part of the program. I'm sure he picked up on that and saw that. You know, like I said, every single person either went to college or the military. Absolutely nobody just went home. So that was amazing. Yeah.
Like, when you like really think about that, like, nobody. That's unheard of. Like, nobody,
yeah,
nobody
for real.
Just wanted to go get a job. You know what I mean?
Absolutely,
you know,
no one. Absolutely,
yeah.
No one. Like, it was like, you know, they wouldn't let you leave with the idea that you're not going to college. Oh, if you're not going to college, then okay. Like, you're going to go get your military money that we set you up to get then. You know what I mean? It was kind of like that. So, you know, that was a good thing.
Hold on. You know what?
You know, yeah,
you know,
man.
Hold on just a second. I don't mean to cut you off, but I'm thinking that if they already set you up to be able to be to have higher rank in the military, entering in as a private, but already having a higher rank as a private, you know, maybe even going all the way up to
private first class or something like that, or staff sergeant,
yeah.
One of the two. It was a staff sergeant or private first class you got to start at.
Okay. So I'm thinking that's a little comparable. That's probably comparable to having a vocational education. You know what I mean? Like learning a trade, going to a trade school, a trade high school like Dobbins or this is for my Philadelphia people, like Mural Dobbins or Mass Bomb or Box Tech or whatever, like going to a Votech high school and already being able to go from high school to already being a professional, certified, licensed, and all of that, ready to work right out of high school. So to me, that sounds a little similar to that as far as the training is concerned. Would you agree with that?
I mean, like, we had vocational classes, but, you know, no, nobody was like job ready leaving there. They didn't push that line that hard. But with the military in particular and only, you were definitely ready to go in basic training and have everybody else looking silly. You
no, that's what
definitely...
I'm saying. What I was saying was it's comparable to, okay, when you go to a vocational technical high school.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's all right. Go ahead though. Go ahead. Finish what you were saying.
But yeah. Okay. Yeah. I totally understand now. Yeah. It's comparable, but yeah. Like I said, you would only have been ready for the military, like not any other vocation.
Okay. Okay, that's understandable. So with that being said. So we're getting a clearer window into why he may have become what he became or what he's still becoming, and why he feels that it's so important to set that school up. Now, we know that anybody who follows Umar Johnson, Dr. Umar Johnson, I want to give him his respect. We know that a lot of people have lost faith in thinking that he's even going to ever finish developing the school, or that the school will ever open. A lot of people have thought that he was just stealing money and raising funds and had no intentions of actually opening the school, but just collecting money and probably looking for an excuse to be able to keep the money without ever opening the school. Let me do you think in your heart of hearts that he will finalize this project and open up the school? And if he does, hypothetically, would you consider sending your children to a Dr. Umar Johnson school?
I was fully confident in him when, you know, I was volunteering for him. And, you know, I would say the only thing that would have shook my confidence is, like, you know, the whole little, you know, his internet scandals, so to speak. You know what I mean? So, you know what I mean? So, you know, I hate to fall victim to scandal. You know what I mean? I hate to let something like that run my opinion. You know what I mean? But
I understand.
You know, I will say that I believe that it's an inception, that in its inception, it was absolutely genuine. And I believe that his intentions were absolutely genuine. But
okay.
I also believe that once in the building, he realized it was too vast, and just like all other black emotionalists, it's like, now it's time to figure out how to make some money, because, you know, helping niggas is hard enough. Now it's like, you know, now I got to figure out, you know, how to pay myself after, like, you know, trying to do this. So I ain't mad at him, but no, I don't think he will finalize it. But I think his intention started off good enough.
Okay. Okay. So just like a lot of people, you can see a lot of the good in him, and you also recognize some of the flaws. And I think that that's important to do when you're dealing with anybody. You know, I think it's a little dangerous when we assign somebody the status of being able to walk on water. You know what I mean? Part the seas, feed a whole village with a fish. You know, that type of thing. Man is the strongest, most intelligent, most able thing that we've ever been exposed to. At the same time, he or she is also the most flawed and negatively motivated thing that we've ever been exposed to also. And sometimes because of our love and our compassion for each other, sometimes we forget to compare one to the other thing and to scrutinize correctly. I want to ask you this one last thing about Umar, and then we're going to move on. And I appreciate this information that you're giving me because you know, we're speaking for a man who's not here to defend himself, and that's why I'm glad that you're not taking any steps to slander him. And I don't ever want to do that unfairly to anyone anyway. Slander, period. No, we're not doing that. But we do want to bring the information, and we are talking about black people in group. I mean, black people in boarding schools and group homes. But I want to ask you this, because you were talking about how there was a certain expectation that all the students had to live up to when they went to your boarding school. Like, there was no way that you were going to practice poor hygiene and be able to have an active social life or not be encouraged or demanded to take care of it. And you also mentioned how because you weren't exposed to your parents all the time, you didn't have the direct advocacy and direction of your biological parents, you came to have to rely on the house parents. Do you think, because the house parents may or may not have been able to administer legally the type of affection that children may have, certain children may have required, I want to say all children may have required the way that their parents would have given them, because you weren't able to just go and express yourself and get a hug and a kiss and just open display of affection from your house parents the way you may have been able to get from your parents. Do you think that that rigidity, do you think that it made the students who went to that boarding school, do you think that it made them a little too hard, a little, and maybe even developed some of them to have lack of compassion, lack of sympathy for certain people in certain situations, because they may look at it like, well, I wasn't able to act like a baby at any time and get away with it, so why should I allow you to get away with it? Do you think that sometimes that for some people it may have made them a little too hard?
Absolutely, man. And I gotta say that, like, I'm probably one of those people, man. It's funny you would bring that up, man, because, you know, my mom just called me yesterday. And, you know, I've been guilty of this my whole life. But my mom called me, you know, ramming on me, straight getting at me, like, yo, why you don't call me? Like, you don't even check on me, da-da-da-da-da. And what came after that was, like, the most significant part of it. She said, like, I mean, I don't hear from you and Hafid. That's my other brother that went to Scotland with me. Like, Hafid is the reason why I ended up in Scotland. But she said, you know, I don't hear from you and Hafid. But your other brother, Ahmed, checks on me all the time. He keeps close tabs with me. But y'all too, I don't know what's up with y'all. Y'all act like I don't exist. And, you know, the truth is, man, we always did our mom like that. You know what I mean? And it's like, I never realized I did it because my pop was always seemed like this big giant to me. And, you know, he was always short for words and never really seemed to have a need for extra social activity. You know what I mean? That's the vibe he gave off. He didn't need to talk to you or be talked to too much, you know what I mean, for either one of y'all to understand what was going on with y'all. So with that said, you know, for the first time, you know, I felt like I should have been reaching out to my dad, and I realized I wasn't, you know what I mean? Like, my dad was going through some health issues, and then I realized, like, you know, like, I think about him, you know, just as much as a person would imagine, you know what I mean? Like, he right here in my heart. I mean, all the time. Like, I think about my father all the time. But, you know, I didn't call and check on him like I did. Like, you know, the stuff like that does become an afterthought. Like, you get used to not having anyone to call on. You get used to, you know, I guess, you know, it's weird because we have our other brother to use as an example. Yes, man, like me and my brother that shared the Scotland experience have always been accused of being cold and a lot less emotional than our counterparts and, you know, our other friends. So, yeah, man, I can't say I picked up on that from other people from Scotland because, you know, I haven't been so personal in their life. But, yeah, it's funny you asked that, and I was just faced with that yesterday. But the thing is, I've always known I was like that with my mom, but I was just recently forced to face that, you know, I was like that with my dad too. So, you know, yeah, if that answers anything, you know what I mean?
That's interesting. I didn't really see that coming. And, you know, it's funny because I've never looked at you as, like, unfeeling or lacking of a conscience or anything like that. But
word.
But at the same time, I could see what I could understand how somebody else's experience may say that. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and honestly with myself too. And I ain't go to that school. But
word.
Yeah. It's just well, you know that there's a common denominator associated with that, though. You know what I'm saying? So if you get something hereditarily, and then you actually get trained in that area, well, yeah, I mean, like the man always says, anything that you practice at, you're gonna get better at, right? So you know.
Yep. And let me add this, son. Let me add this. Since Scotland, yeah, man, I really have been accused by almost everybody that knows me close and personal as being lacking emotion and empathy. Like empathy mainly, not quite emotion, but yeah, man, you know. And I had to admit it. Like, yeah, maybe I have a serious, serious lacking of empathy. You know, I was never able to grasp on the concept of needing something else to deal with something else. You know, like, I've always known, like, I got what I got and I got to make it work with what I got. And it was always clear, like, ain't no time to stop and cry. Ain't nothing to stop and cry about. You know, it's like everything was so, you know, I don't know, maybe it was so business-like. It was never, you know, like, I don't know if it was because living with so many people that, like, you know, having to compromise so much, you know, it was always a need to find a common ground and things like that. But, you know, like, I have this thing, and you know what? It's like that with most Scotland people that I noticed. It's like this, like, wait, what are you talking about? Like, you know, like, yeah, like, no excuses. Like, we do not use excuses. Like, that is the one thing that does not come from the people that went to Scotland with me. There is no reason why you couldn't. Like, it's on you. We were taught to take responsibility for ourselves and our own actions. So it's hard. And for me, it's always been hard to hear people in need of coddling, like, even as adults, you know. So this was always like, what's going on with you? Like, what's wrong with you? Like, so, you know, I really lack empathy, and I think it's shared across the board with people from Scotland. But, you know, I mean, I think it's sort of a good thing because, you know, like, it's all about what's right and what's wrong, but not in a religious sense. It's just like, you know, we were raised on what's the most effective and best way to do this and make this happen for all of us. Like, we were a team no matter how we felt about each other. Like, you know, our fates were interlocked. So, you know, it's like we carry that with us. But, like, I noticed in the outside world, people have these attachments to things and these needs that are foreign to me. So I'm gonna stop right there.
Well, I don't think you know how much you said, honestly, because. Okay, when you think about the boarding school experience versus the experience of the conventional schools that people go to, the conventional public schools or conventional private schools that most people go to, where they come home to their families every day, and you see the separation, you see the difference, and that people would really either gravitate towards or really try to avoid from having their own children experience. Now, I can see the benefits in the training that you had. And to me, this is where the military part of your boarding school experience really seems to stand out. You know, in the military, you have to get used to taking accountability for your actions because your troop, your regimen, your platoon, they all depend on your contribution. So if you mess up, everyone else can be compromised. They can be killed, hurt, revealed. You know what I'm saying? It can really have devastating effects if you don't play your part. So, you know, let's say you fall asleep on your patrol or something like that, and the enemy is able to creep up on you and mess everybody up. It's not a good look. I could see how it would discipline a person to stay on their job and to make sure that they didn't put themselves in a position to have to make excuses. But it doesn't mean that nobody is ever going to make any mistakes, and it doesn't mean that in this situation, it doesn't mean that in this particular instance, you actually catch more bees with a fly swatter than with honey. Like, on all the other ones, you catch more bees with honey than a fly swatter. But on this one, you actually catch more with the fly swatter than the honey. You understand what I mean? And I'm saying that in a roundabout way to say that everybody needs love and affection. Everybody needs it, especially when you're dealing with children. Especially when you're dealing with the development of children that are going to need that somewhere along in their lives. It's almost equivalent to teaching a child that the only people that they have to respect are the people with money. Like if he ain't got no money, if she ain't got no money, then they're not worthy of respect. Because in a child's mind, that makes sense. Like, well, look, you see, all of these people over here, they're able to buy everything they want. They run everything. They are the elite. They are the cream de la creme of people. And these people over here, they don't have no money, so they don't have no power. They don't get no justice or whatever. It's no wonder because they're not contributing. They didn't do enough to be able to get the power, and the money is the power. So when you teach a child that way, then they may fail to recognize the beauty in people and the value in people outside of their monetary contribution that they bring to you. So it can be detrimental to their development and their understanding. And they're going to be forced to change that view of the world somewhere along the line, especially if you're Black, because we just aren't in a position at any stage in our lives, realistically, to value money over everything else, because we have been in a position where we were money. We were actual currency. We were trade. You understand what I'm saying? So for us to embrace an ideology where we think that, well, you don't really need love, you don't really need affection to be okay. And I have people who didn't go to boarding schools act like they've gotten that type of training. The thing is, it's wrong. It's incorrect. Everyone does need affection. Everyone does need somebody that they could go and lean on, cry on, you know, ask for help. I mean, you know, not to put you on blast, but you know how me and you are. You know what I'm saying? You know, even though we joke around, you know, we have this thing when I have a question about something, or if I'm in trouble about something, you know, we be talking about, yo, I'm calling you with my arms flailing in the air. Like me and my baby brother got this thing where we talk about our arms flailing. So like when I called you, what was it, yesterday morning? Yeah, it was like it was kind of early in the morning. And, you know, my baby brother, like, you scared to answer the phone. Like, no, this ain't a good time.
I swear.
But yeah. but you know that you can count on me to give you, you know, whatever information that you need or help with that you require, and I'm able to depend on you for the same thing. So during our lives, we're going to get to the point where we need to depend on somebody when we just aren't feeling as strong as we are used to feeling or as vital as we would like to feel on a regular basis. We're just not able to shake it off all the time. It's almost you know how the general consensus among women are that men don't really care about women that much, you know, in their romantic personal relationships. Like women seem to think that men, no matter how much they say they love a woman, if they break up with a woman, they're able to move on easily, and you know all they got to do is get some new pussy or something like that or whatever, and they can move on with their lives, and it's just not true. It's not true at all. You know, when you really take a strong look at it, but because there are enough examples where people have made it look like they're able to move on that way, or when they look like they were able to navigate themselves through life without any direct open displays of affection or secret displays of affection. It gives the wrong impression to some people, and it's hard. It's a tough situation. So, and your experience, you may have gotten a healthy dose or a really big heaping of you. Like, let's say the affection that you may have needed from your parents was the mashed potatoes. Well, you got a good heaping of mashed potatoes on the plate. You know what I'm saying? And that's not to say that that's the way you are all the time. But in your acknowledgement that you may have gotten it a little bit more than other people, it's just something that we have to take a look at. And hopefully you're not looking at your personal experience like, well, I mean, you know how some people say, well, I made it. Then if I can make it, anybody else can make it too. It ain't that big of a deal, you know, because that's almost like going right down the same rabbit hole of what you were trying to explain your way away from, you know, explain your way out of. Now I'm rambling,
yeah,
right?
Nah, I'll tell you. But nah, man, you topped it off with that word accountability. It boils down to that. Like, that's what you weren't able to escape. And like, like, that's the main thing I see that I and other, it ain't just me. Like, we all gained it. Accountability. Mm-hmm. And I notice in the real world, like people make up and have all of these reasons why. And like, yeah, it's just like, well, no. You know what I mean? Like philosophy matters in the real world. You know what I mean? In the military, mm-hmm. results matter. What actually happened matter. And it was kind of like, it just kind of went like that. But yeah, so nah, it definitely wasn't just me. You know what I mean? It was a pretty collective thing. You know what I mean? And like I said, I noticed it as we were adults.
Yeah.
But yeah, that word accountability, that hit it dead on the head.
Yeah. Accountability is a big thing, especially nowadays when we look at the political, social, and personal landscape of the way our communities, our societies, and our set up. It's something that way too many people are trying to escape, but way too many people are I don't want to say guilty of, but way too many people have some unhealthy participation in. But But yeah, okay. So listen, I wanna make sure that we talk a little bit about group homes today, because we really didn't get a chance to delve into that yesterday. So I want to talk to you a little bit about it. Oh, he dropped. Well, if he calls back, that's a good thing. And if he, if I have to hold it down for myself, I'll hold it down with the assistance of y'all. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, when we talk about group homes, many of the same circumstances that send our young black men and sometimes women to group homes exist when we talk about sending our young black men and women to boarding schools. If you were born to neglectful parents, non-attentive parents, parents who were way too busy with other things going on in their lives, whether they had men or women that they were showing more interest in than their families, or whether they had financial interests, in other words, whether they had a job that they poured all of their time and energy into, aside from being a parent, which they elected to do, it can have an effect on a child, especially when there aren't other resources put in place that can help a child through their early development. Extended family members, you know, grandparents, aunts, uncles, older siblings, or even siblings that aren't that much older but are responsible and that care. I think that we all grow up with strong influences from our elders, but we don't always get a chance to be around with strong positive influence from our elders. And when you grow up without strong positive influences from your elders, who are your first heroes, who are your guiders, your coaches, your tutors, your first lines of defense when it comes to knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, then what can happen is that you fall into a life of crime or valuing a life of crime. I mean, it's not a coincidence that if you grow up around the drug culture, if all of the people that you knew growing up were drug dealers, and they were if all of the people that you knew who were successful, that's what I needed to say, if all of the people that you knew that were successful in your eyes were part of the criminal element, then your influence to enter that area in that realm is going to be stronger than somebody who was exposed to people who were successful from going to school, from doing the right things, from being responsible, for being helpful in the community. If all of the people that you know growing up who were successful were doctors and lawyers and businessmen and teachers and instructors and coaches and just soup kitchen workers and people who were just always trying to commit more selfless acts or positive endeavors in their lives, yeah, you're going to think like, yeah, the only way to be successful is to discipline myself, to do the right things and to go to school and to follow through and see things, see my projects through to the end and dream big and get around other people who are getting it. Yeah, that influence is going to be strong. And more than likely, the likelihood of getting into things that are criminal, it's going to be a little, like, I don't, why would I want to do that? I don't want to be running from the cops all the time. I don't want to be ducking rival crews. I don't want to be out here taking chances on my freedom and stuff like that. So when we talk about group homes, you're for the majority of the conversation, you're talking about people who have been exposed to negative influences. You're talking about people who didn't get the parental guidance that they really needed and that they required. You're talking about a lot of kids who were kind of cast to the side. Even if they were given the attention that they needed, they weren't given the attention in a positive way. You can show a child how to do all of the wrong things right. I'm going to say that again. You can teach a child, you know what, I'm going to say it like Umar Johnson would say. You can teach a child how to do all the wrong things right. You can teach a child how to do all of the wrong things right. You can teach a child how to do all of the wrong things right. That's how Umar would say. Now tell me I'm lying. Tell me I'm lying. I already do it a million times.
That's that pulpit bass.
You there?
You put that pulpit on it. I heard you.
You know he do that all the time. You know what I mean? You
can teach the pulpit accent.
You can teach a child how to do all of the wrong things. I mean, all of the wrong things right. You can teach a child how to do all of the wrong things right. You can teach a child how to do all of the wrong things right.
That's stupid, man.
So, you know, but when you're talking about a group home, a lot of times you're talking about diamonds in the rough that go undiscovered. Some do get discovered, and unfortunately, they often get discovered too late or extremely late in the game. You know, most people that you know that have gone that have attended a group home or grew up or spent most of their teenage years in group homes, most of them have either a comeback story to tell, or they'll show you exactly which road to ruin that they are on. And a lot of it has to do with what was going on at home. So the same way that many parents may have sent their children to a boarding school so they wouldn't have to deal with them on a regular basis, with a group home, the parents may not have intended for their children to grow up in or be sent to a group home. But if you don't teach your children teach your children the value of going to school, of learning how to read, write, do math, science, learn history, think critically, involve themselves in healthy, constructive debate, to not handle all of their differences and problems with violence, not to be overly emotional, not to act too impulsively. When you fail to show your children how to do that, what do you expect? What do you expect? If I don't teach my babies how to read and write, well, the only thing I can do is hope that their teacher does that for them, and I hope and hope that my child accepts those teachings. But if I can't give them at home what I expect them to be given away from home, then my expectations aren't worth anything. It's just not a good look. So in the 80s, when I was growing up, a lot of my peers, a lot of people that I knew, a lot of my old classmates and stuff like that, they were winding up in Glen Mills, Slayton Farms, Lafayette, first going to the Youth Study Center. They were selling drugs. And they were selling drugs because selling drugs was seen as easy at the time, and it was lucrative as fuck. There's no way that you could sell drugs in the 80s and not get paid. It ain't like now. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, you know, now it's like you. A lot of these young cats, it seems like they're selling drugs just to be able to get street cred to make a mixtape. Well, back then, that's not how it was going. If you sold crack in 85, 86, 87, 88, 89, you was getting money, real money. And that was in any capacity. I bet you one thing, you may not have gotten rich off of it, but you could afford some gold jewelry and a little car. You could ride around in a little 86 Jetta. I tell you that shit. If you couldn't afford a Volkswagen Jetta back then you I don't know what you were selling. You know what I'm saying? You must have been selling weed. You couldn't make no big money selling weed in the 80s. You gotta get the crack. Funny how that's changed. Like, what the hell? You
know, how about that?
Yeah. But yeah. So many people who go, many of our young people who end up in group homes have trouble academically. And it's not till they go to the damn group home that seems to get addressed. Now, this boy or this girl, and already, here they are. 15 years old in the sixth grade. Ain't nobody do nothing about that? Well, your academic struggles may come secondary if your problems with discipline and violence or something seems to take center stage. So where people may have thought you weren't coming to school because you had better things to do, you may not have been coming to school because you were embarrassed because you didn't have the skills to be able to do well in school. It hurts, you know? But your old head shows you how to cook up the crack. I'm gonna show you how to work with this powder, with this water, with this ice. And with this baking soda, matter of fact, we're gonna hook you up with this B12, new shit. And you know, you became a little scientist. You learn how to you may not have known how to do well do well in math, but you learn how to measure pretty well, and it put you in a position where your academic performance wasn't so highlighted or necessary to be on display because you was getting money. You know how they say, if you're such a scholar, why can't you make a dollar? If you were such a scholar, why can't you make a dollar? If you were such a scholar, why can't you make a dollar? Yo, sit back, relax, chill. Yo, I holla. So, you know, it's a disheartening situation for me. When I think about it, because I remember when I was trying to do my best to holler at this young boy that lived on my block about 5 years ago, six years ago. This was about 2016. And I noticed that this young boy, he didn't never go to school. And nobody was saying anything about it. I'm like, how is it that you home with your mom all day? And you serve, you on the block serving a little bit. You ain't really serving, but you serving a little bit. But you're not going to school. So I pulled him aside one day, like, you know, what's up with you, man? Like, how come I don't, you know, like, I asked him, I said, are you going back to school this semester? And he said, I'm about to go back. But, like I got kicked out. But I'm about to go back, but I gotta go to Boone. I said, okay. I said, well, when you think that's gonna happen? And I asked him how old he was, and he was only 15 years old. So I had been checking the boy out since like a year and a half before, about a year and a half before, and it's like I'm seeing him like, damn. So you only 15. I've never seen you go to school, even when you may have been 13 or 14. And I asked him what his favorite subject was, in school, and he said math. And I knew he was going to say math because there's no way it would have been reading. You know, you can always tell when somebody's good subject is reading, because the path that they take, the way that the brain works, is always a little bit more advanced when they read. Not to say that people who do math are slow, because of course when you do math, you have to think in terms of a process. You know, what happens on one side, what you do on one side, you have to do on the other side. So math is a process that people who are patient do well in, because they realize you have to do this first, that second, that third, that fourth, that fifth, until you complete the equation. That's the way a person who's good at math thinks. A person who's good at reading thinks more liberally. Like, I will find a way to do a math problem, but not necessarily the 1, 2, 3, 4. Like, just like reading a book, I don't have to read it from cover to cover. I can start in the middle. I can read the back first. I can go all the way to the back cover and get the gist of what the book said is talking about. Read a couple of chapters, see if I like it or not. You know what I mean? I may read the book from the middle to the front, and then to the end later. Yeah, like there are different ways you can do. There's different ways that a reading person may think than a person who's good at math. But anyway, he said his favorite topic, subject was math. And I said, okay. I said, well, listen, man, you know, like, I know that you're a smart kid, and I think that you have a lot of potential. And I don't want to see you go by the wayside. I said, but listen, I went to Penn State and I graduated, you know, a long time ago, and I'm good at certain subjects in school. But when I was in school, you know, I struggled. You know what I mean? I struggled at certain times. There were certain times when I was genius-like, and there were other times when I didn't feel like I could even calculate 1 + 1 or whatever. But I was extending myself to this young man because I knew that because he was going to Daniel Boone, and Daniel Boone is the disciplinary school in the city of Philadelphia for children who have discipline problems, academic problems mixed together. They're pretty much troubled, and they are living on the edge, and they are in crisis. It's the youth in crisis, and how that plays out has a lot to do with the caring and attentiveness of people who will help them through their adjudication. You know, when you are an adult, you get sentenced for a crime that you have been convicted of. When you are under 18 years old, you are adjudicated. It's the same process, except you don't go to jail. You go to a juvenile facility, like a group home. And if you do well there, you can come home. And the group home is sort of like a boarding school. It has a lot of the same properties that a boarding school has. You're not going to be calling home every day, being able to communicate with people that you sort of left behind. Because many of those people that you left behind may have been the reason that you're in the group home in the first place. Now you come into the group home to try to rehabilitate yourself. They don't say words like rehabilitate because you haven't been convicted. You've been adjudicated. But you have a chance to reform yourself. And they do use words like that because group homes used to be called reform schools. Reform schools. One of the good things about a group home is that they're going to identify any academic struggles that you've had. And they're also going to do some psychiatric evaluations to see what other types of mental and emotional challenges that you may have that may contribute that may have contributed to you getting out there selling drugs or knocking niggas out or you know, stealing shit and just acting all wild like a wild hillbilly. Just, you know, practicing that savage type of behavior. But we can all do something to help our young people to be able to get past that stage in our lives. So whether you're talking about a more positive situation where you're talking about a boarding school where you may or may not have had to pay your on there, or whether you're talking about a group home that your child has to go to improve themselves so that they can get back home and hopefully on the right track, the right road to success and positive development. I know that a lot of our people who have gone to boarding school, group homes, have a positive story to tell, and they have felt the need and the obligation to give back to their communities and to save young people who they saw were on the same road to ruin that they may have been on. And hopefully they recognize that in their own offspring. Interestingly enough, you know, when we were talking about Dr. Umar Johnson and how he's a child advocate, well, he was a child advocate for developmental youth. You know, he was very much against of giving children antidepressant medication and like Ritalin for children who express problems in their development and stuff like that. Interestingly enough, Dr. Umar Johnson does not have children. You know, we're talking about a 46-year-old man who doesn't have any children. So I guess you don't have to have children in order to understand the needs of children and to try to address those needs. So, listen, I want to bring my baby brother back on here so I can thank him for coming through and giving up the real, giving up that good information. I know that dedicating yourself to, you know, bringing forth that information and doing it in such a concise and really, really clear way of the way that you did, it can be, you are giving a lot of yourself. Many people strive hard to hide things that happened to them when they grew up, the same way that they may hide things that are going on with them to this very day. And it doesn't help. But sometimes we don't give a shit whether something is helping in terms of the long run. We try to make sure that we can make it through the day, make it through the day, make it through the day. I'ma do it my way, and I don't care what the next man might say. Hey, yo, listen to this. I'ma get through this day, and I'm trying not to get pissed, because when I get mad, I do things. Y'all want to see that shit? Not from the Kings, and that's my word, y'all. I want to thank y'all for coming through and checking out the Urban Therapy with Sun show this morning on this 7th of March. And we have some birthday shout-outs to do. Some people were born on this glorious, glorious, glorious March 7th, and they deserve to be acknowledged. So let's go about our business of acknowledging them and making them feel special, because they are special, because they are special, because they are S-P-E-C-I-A-L. They get the R-E-S-P-E-C-T. They are S-P-E-C-I-A-L. They get the R-E-S-P-E-C-T. They are S-P-E-C-I-A-L. They get the R-E-S-P-E-C-T. They get number one out the box. I know I didn't think I was going to be able to read. Okay, Evelina John, happy birthday.
Yo,
you there? You all right? You good?
Yeah, I'm here. My bad. I was on mute, but I forgot.
No, you cool. All right. Turning 30 years old today, and also Mona J. Wyatt turning 51 years old today, and Kathy and K. John. That's right, K. John. That's J. A-W-N, happy birthday to you, Kay. And also, Malik Smith, turning 51 years old today, and Maria Altagracia Leriano Mofe, turning 43 years old today. And Yolanda Brooks, turning 44 years old today. Bow, 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 bow. Yeah, what's up now? And my girl, Kelly Jenneret, she be doing it way big. On that travel agent side, you know what I mean? She's built herself up, and she's building other people, helping them to, you know, get that residual income. You know, who says pyramid schemes don't work? Who says pyramid schemes don't work? Mid-level marketing. If you're serious about yours, you can put some money in the pocket. Okay, and Lita Lee turning 39 years old today, and last but certainly not least, my girl, Jackie Freeze. That's Jacqueline Singleton. My girl, go get a Jackie Freeze, a Jacqueline, a Singleton. Happy birthday to you. I want to say happy birthday to all of you and anyone else out there who shares this birthday when it's glorious. Glorious, glorious. March 7th, anywhere out there in the world, worldwide, internationally, and universally. All of y'all go ahead and turn up. But don't turn up too loud. Just turn up loud enough so everybody can hear you. Rock out. Rock on and do the damn to rock out. Rock on and do the damn rock out. Rock on and do the damn thing to do your thing, y'all. Represent the queens and kings to do your thing, y'all. Represent the queens and kings. Good things happen to those who wait. Great things happen to those who grind. And anything can happen to those who go for theirs. So go hard, go for yours. And remember, man, listen, we was talking about finishing up our discussion from yesterday about boarding schools. I want to thank my baby brother for coming through once again. I wanted to thank
very
you for
welcome,
coming
very
on.
Welcome.
Without a doubt, man. I want to thank you for coming on, and I want to thank you for coming through, because you definitely did both of them. I'm very proud of you. You know, I love you to death. Resuscitation, love you back to life. And you know, you're my number one and my day one. You know what I'm saying? And you are living proof that your day one can come later. You know what I mean? Day one don't have to start on day one, so, you know what I'm saying? But anyway.
Word out.
You know what I mean? But talking about boarding schools, thinking and talking about group homes and stuff like that. You know, all of these things that we are talking about, or should I say both of these things that we're talking about, involve the development of children. You know, I, the children really are our future. And if we do not do the things that are necessary to try to ensure that they have the best chances, you know, we just need to be able to get them on an even playing field. Because when we're talking about the young black children, We're not talking about a culture of people who have ever experienced being on an even playing field, just having a decent shot at life. And many of us don't even recognize that we haven't been exposed to an even playing field. We're so used to playing from behind. We like, well, how come you can't win from behind? Yeah, we know all of us are from behind. Why can't you catch up? Win from behind. We coming from behind. It's like, and that's not even an excuse. That's an explanation. It's real. You know, like a lot of a lot of people don't want to accept that we have been maligned so much. And when we talk about boarding schools and when we talk about group homes, we're talking about a situation where we have to entrust the care of our children to somebody else. Now, let's see how it happens. I hope that it turns out right. A lot of times it's turned out really good, but we all know about situations where it hasn't turned out so well. We didn't talk a lot about abuse or anything like that during this conversation, and it's not because I didn't want to address it, and it's not because I don't think that it exists or that it's not applicable. I didn't do it because I think we already know. Somebody out there got touched. Somebody out there got beat. Somebody out there got roughed up. Somebody out there was taught the wrong way, and they was taught that the wrong way was the right way. We got to go through that today. Hey, hey. Peace to all my day ones, my everydays, and my brand news. Love y'all to death. Resuscitate y'all. Love y'all back to life. I appreciate y'all coming through. Please make sure y'all hit the like button if you haven't hit the like button. Make sure that you share the show if you haven't shared the show. And make sure that you subscribe to the channel if you haven't subscribed to the channel yet. This movement is going forward. It's moving forward. It's moving in the right direction, and we want you to move right with it. So do that for me, and I do that for you, and I get back with all of you. So with that said, let me get Blog Talk on the body here. All right, baby brother, I'll holler at you a little later.
Hey. All right, son. Love you.
All right, love you too.
Love you by the show. Keep
no
it down.
All right.